Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. It is 510, 78 degrees on this Thursday, May 1st, 2025. You can call or text at 570-883-0098. Get involved with the conversation. For full disclosure, the killing of Osama bin Laden by the DevGru team, Operation Neptune Spear, it occurred at 11:35 p.m. on May 1st, our time, Washington, D.C. time, Eastern Standard Time. It actually took place on May 2nd, local time, in Islamabad. So just so people text me in with the dates, that's the explanation for that. It actually happened on May 1st, our time, at 11:35 p.m. at night, which was actually May 2nd in Islamabad, where it actually took place. Let me go to the phone now. We have Larry from Plymouth. Larry.
Hi, Rob. This woman you're talking about with the CIA, I've never heard of that, but 9/11 didn't have to happen. Do you know a guy named Michael Shore?
I've heard the name.
Okay, Michael Shore was the head of the bin Laden unit under Bill Clinton, and he said they had 10 chances to get bin Laden. They could have got him twice at Tora Bora and killed him, and they could have captured him 8 times. But every time they sent that information to the White House, they were refused. So if you want to blame somebody for 9/11, you blame Bill Clinton.
Oh, no doubt. I am well aware that they had several targeting opportunities on bin Laden before it happened.
They said they didn't want to have any, whatever you call it, they didn't want anybody else to get killed.
Collateral damage, yes.
Yes, exactly. But and another thing, Rob, I don't like that these guys come back, you know, SEAL teams and all, and they write these books. I don't go for that at all. Rob O'Neill, Rowan, and Chris Kyle. Chris Kyle had PTSD real bad. But anyway, they said he had 160 confirmed kills, but that took 10 years. Do you know who the greatest sniper in history was?
It was that Vietnam-era guy.
Who's that?
The Vietnam-era guy.
No, it was before that. His name was Simo Haiha, and he was a Finn. And during the 20s, you have to join the Finland army. So he was in for 2 years. And then he got out, and all he wanted to do was be a farmer. But when the Russians attacked Finland, he joined back up. And he was only like 120 pounds by 5'4". And it snows a lot in Finland. So he became a sniper. And in 8 months, he had 556 confirmed kills. The Russians called him White Death, because he wore one of them white jumpsuits.
Yes.
And they finally did get him. They hit him with they're shooting a howitzer at him or something. And he got hit, and it blew part of his face off. But he almost died, but he did recover, and he lived to be like 93. He died in the 90s. But like I said, I don't like them writing books. I think this woman you're talking about, if nobody knows her, I agree with that. You shouldn't.
There was an entire team that was assigned to this, but she was the primary push on it. And listen, I know Rob O'Neill, and I know a little of the reasoning behind it. And listen, there's some people who write books. There's some people who didn't. And there's a mix of beliefs in that. There are a lot of people in the team environment that don't like it at all. They think they should be the silent professionals. And, there's a lot of people who agree with that. But a little reasoning with Rob O'Neill is, after Operation Neptune Spear took place, the Obama administration actually provided some of the CIA people to the producers of Zero Dark Thirty, the movie they made from that. And a lot of people made a lot of money off of that movie based on what happened, friends of the Obama administration who were there. And that aggravated a lot of people in the teams to where they said, you know what, some of them came out and did their own thing. Not saying it's right or wrong, but it was definitely in response to that.
Yeah. Well, and another way I could look at it, too, hey, you go risk your life, so maybe you should get paid for it,
Yeah, but I agree, and a lot of the people in the teams, listen, I serve on a SEAL, Navy SEAL Foundation. I'm around the community an awful lot, and the majority of the community agree with you that they just like to remain that silent professional. And when they retire, right off into the sunset.
Do you know, geez, I can't think of his name now. Lone Survivor. What was his name?
Marcus Luttrell. Yes, I did. I actually gave Marcus a piece of the World Trade Center when I met him.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
I've liked some of his speeches. He's good.
I actually just played. He testified just recently, last week, I believe, in front of the Texas legislature about psychoactive therapy that he's taken that has helped reshape his life. You know, he was into the painkillers and alcohol real bad after all the surgeries he had, and you know he sees that as a real viable under a doctor's care, of course, but a real viable therapy for men and women who have seen what he's seen. But
he has an identical twin brother, too.
Yeah, Morgan Luttrell. He serves in Congress. He's a member of Congress now.
The thing is,
most Navy SEALs are smaller, very wiry, well-built guys that could go forever. But if you ever met Rob O'Neill or Marcus or his brother Morgan, they're big dudes.
Yeah, I know they are.
And how they get through, the big dudes usually don't make it through this kind of training because it just beats up their body so much. And you know, both of them have some real funny stories about their size working against them through the SEAL team training and falling out of helicopters into the water and falling asleep underwater and not fitting in the small.
I heard that story. He said, don't do that.
Yeah, falling asleep inside, not fitting into the SEAL delivery vehicle, which is the mini submarine that takes them around. I'm honored to call a lot of these gentlemen my friends.
I was going to say, you're lucky to meet those guys. I'd love to.
Yeah, no doubt. Larry, I appreciate you checking in today.
Okay, thanks, Rob.
Thank you.
Bye.
Let's go on with the next story here, because this kind of took me for a loop. A teen. You know, we were talking earlier in the show, at the beginning of the show at 3 o'clock, about these shootings in our area. And in Long Island, New York, they just arrested 28 kids around 15 with guns and gangs and drugs and money and everything. And we see the shootings here in our area. A teen charged with a Tesla firebombing has been released from federal custody. You know why the judge released him? To continue gender-affirming medical care that they cannot get in the prison. So we're just going to let you go. And you got to attend your court dates, but you know you need to do what you need to do. The college student accused of firebombing a Tesla dealership has been released from federal custody to continue gender-affirming medical care, according to a report. Owen McIntyre, 19, is facing federal charges for allegedly tossing two Molotov cocktails into a Missouri Tesla dealership last month, causing hundreds of thousands of dollars in damages to two Cybertrucks and two charging stations, according to the feds. The University of Massachusetts physics student was granted release by a U.S. magistrate judge, Jessica Hedges, due to serious and ongoing medical needs. Serious and ongoing medical needs, which included gender-affirming medical care that requires daily medication as well as mental health support. McIntyre is also on the autism spectrum and was diagnosed with both ADHD and depression, all of which requires medication and treatments that excuse him from remaining in prison, his lawyers successfully argued. By moving back home with his parents, he will have access to the care providers who are familiar with him and his specific needs, the court documents read. Well, maybe they should have thought of that. If this was so detrimental to their health, safety, and well-being, their mental health, if this is the direction they wanted to go in, well, how about you don't throw firebombs into Tesla dealers? How about that? You got high blood pressure. You go out and kill someone. I can't be in jail. I got high blood pressure. I need to be at home, relaxed. I can't be in a prison environment. Judge Jessica Hedges, who was appointed in 2024, overruled objections from the U.S. attorney and from the Western District of Missouri, who claimed the terrorism-related charges warranted McIntyre to be treated as a public safety threat. Well, their own justification for the care that they say this person needs is He's unstable mentally. Suffers from ADHD and depression. Mental health support is needed. Obviously, they failed before they decided to throw firebombs in a building. But for a judge to just say, you go home with your parents. You need this medical care. It's more important than public safety. It's more important than holding you accountable for the crimes you committed. The hundreds of thousands of dollars of damage you've done. You need to be you. So we need to let you go be you. We're on a weird course in parts of America. We're in a time where you have silence when millions of people crossed into our nation and you had an administration go, we're going to just make you all asylum seekers. Most of you, anyway. We're going to expand the definition. We're going to give you court cases for years in the future. But try and send them out. No, you need due process. Where's the due process for us, the American citizens, who are paying for all this? Where's the due process of our tax dollars being misspent by the cretins that are elected into official office that are making these decisions against our wishes in a lot of times? I mean, illegal immigration has been an overwhelming mandate as well. You might have some bleeding heart liberals over there that say, oh, listen, the gang member, violent domestic abuser deserves to be here amongst us. He's just a dad from Maryland. Then we find out more and more he's not so much. Now we found out another PFA. In addition to the one we just found out about a few weeks ago, there's another one that goes all the way back to 2020 where the father of this current gang member's wife with had the kid, she has a kid with someone else as well. Well, that father was feared for his life because this guy was a gang member. And he documented it in a PFA. Said he wanted to kill me, he wanted to kill her, he wanted to kill our kids. Because he's a violent gang member. But no, there's no evidence that this guy's a gang member. None at all. Now, Rob, you can't justifiably say that all Democrats support MS-13. No, I can't. But some of you do. Some of you do. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. So, Jake, did you see this fan at the baseball stadium, PNC Park, during a Pirates game? Fell 21 feet from the upper deck. In critical condition, so alive. But, there's a lot of controversy over the video. And there is a video of this person falling from it. It appears to me the person just jumped up and lost balance and fell forward or jumped forward. It doesn't look like they purposely jumped.
No.
Because they kind of tumbled and spun head over feet as they came down to the turf and landed pretty bad.
Yeah, 21 feet.
Yeah, 21 feet is a long way down. And they just laid there. I mean, it's not like they were moving. And it took some time for people to get to him. I mean, the outfielders were coming off the field when this happened. So they were running away from where it's not like they stood there and watched it. But there were some officials out there that kind of just strolled over, really not knowing what's going on. But until you see the video, the full impact is like, oh, my God. Yeah, and again, zooming in on the video that I've seen, and if you haven't seen it, it's all over the internet. And then if you're queasy about stuff like that, because it is pretty brutal. The person was sitting in the front row seat on the upper deck, 21 feet above the turf. And it looks to me like they just jumped up in excitement. And if you stand up, the railing came to about, just above your belly button, just about your waist. And that's normal for these type of stadiums. A lot of times, you have to see through it to see the game. A lot of chatter on social media like, no, this person just jumped over. No, he didn't. Because if they would have jumped purposely, I don't think they would have fell the way they did. Because it literally, they jumped up, rolled over the banister forward, and kind of tumbled head over feet two or three times before they hit the ground, before they hit the dirt track in the outside of the outfield, where the grass ends and there's that, 10 feet, 15 feet of dirt before the wall the padded wall, and he fell out in the infield of the wall, so into that dirt track that's there. Tragic story, and it just goes to show you got to be careful. Now, there are reports alcohol was involved, but tell me when alcohol is not involved in a baseball game. Or any other sporting event, for that matter, for the most part. It's a shame because here is someone, and it was really people around that were sitting next to him, like kind of all didn't know what was happening. That's how, you know, it just happened. It's pretty crazy. Pretty crazy. But they are in critical condition. Hopefully, they were carted off by groundspeople and emergency crews. They did obviously put a collar on the person. But it's called Clemente Wall. It's the right field at PNC Park during Wednesday night's game at the Pittsburgh Pirates, Chicago Cubs. Right after Andrew McCutchen hit a two-run double in the seventh inning, put the Pirates ahead 4-3. And again, I think this fan just got excited and lost their balance, fell over the banister. But it's brutal when you see it on the video of it. Now, I'm sure as time goes on, there'll be more and more because they got pretty high-def cameras in there. This seemed to be from a far distance, and thankfully so, because it was a pretty tragic fall. But, I mean, thankfully they're at least alive. There were reports when it first happened that, you know, this person's got to be dead. And thankfully they're not. They are in critical condition, though, and hopefully not paralyzed because there's no talk of that. But craziness going on. We have some more sports talk when we come back in the next half. But right now it's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. Well, since we're talking about sports here, it's 5:35, 77 degrees. Jets quarterback Jordan Travis retires from football due to a gruesome injury 1 year after being drafted and never once playing a single game. Listen, Jake, I give this guy all the credit in the world for realizing that his health, safety, and well-being is more important than possibly crippling himself.
Yeah, Rob, it's very, very unfortunate situation, but definitely a very smart move when you have to think more about your life and your quality of life more so than the dream that you had. And with Jordan Travis, he was at Florida State and had some pretty incredible years in 2022, 2023. I mean, they went 10-3 in 2022. They were 11-0 with him in 2023. And then I will never forget, it was 2 years ago. It was the week before Thanksgiving, and he had a horrible, and I mean horrible, injury. It was, I have it right here. He was running, and his left leg was basically dangling. It was like this. It was awful, absolutely awful. And I mean, up to that point, so what happened was he was trying to get a first down, and then the old hip drop tackle, and it caused his ankle to be twisted very awkwardly, and they had to put an air cast on him, and he was carted off the field. And he was also in the running for the Heisman Trophy that year. And up until that point, I mean, who knows where he would have gone in the 2024 NFL draft before all of this happened. And then the Jets took him in the fifth round. So
yeah, 171st pick of the fifth round of the 2024 draft. In hopes he'd be able to rehab the leg and become an eventual backup or even a starter. The 6'1", 200-pound Travis, who finished fifth in the Heisman Trophy voting despite the injury. So that's after the injury he came in fifth.
Yeah, it's just so, like I said, just so sad and so unfortunate because it's definitely one of those situations where you think, what could have been? And I mean, he had that year, 2023, he had a completion percentage of 64.1. He had, let's see here, 44 passing touchdowns in those two seasons that I was talking about, 2022, 2023, on top of all the rushing touchdowns that he had as well. I believe it was 14. So, yeah, that's, you know, we talk about the NFL draft over the past week or so, and you talk about, obviously, the dreams that these guys have of obviously making it to the highest level. It's something that you work your entire life at, from the time you're a kid all the way through high school to college, and then just the way that this all ended is just awful. Absolutely awful.
And to have the wherewithal to go through all that, and just looking at his career, like you said, you know, he played 46 games at FSU, threw 8,644 yards, 65 touchdowns and 19 interceptions, finished his college career with 17 consecutive wins. He announced he was retiring in a handwritten letter on X. Listen, you got to respect that, too.
Yeah.
He wrote a handwritten letter and posted a picture of it on his social media. Again, never playing a professional game because of his injury.
And that's the thing too, Rob, is like you were talking about, for him to actually take the time to handwrite something like this and handwrite what is the most difficult decision of his life, for that matter. Because nowadays, I mean, the world we live in, you're talking about social media, and you'll just have guys, like I was saying, they'll tweet it out, or they'll even go into their notes on their phone and type whatever they have planned and screenshot it and put it all across social media. So, you know, it's an unfortunate end for Jordan Travis, but obviously I think handled it, like we talked about earlier, handled it with a lot of professionalism and a lot of class. So.
And again, he was drafted. You know, there is some sort of retirement plan, you know, injury plan for NFL players, because they do risk injury every game they play. So, you know, it's not like he's out on the street and, you know, this is someone just seeing this here, and I don't know what his background in college was outside of football or such like that, but a young man like this with this sort of ethics and this moral value, I want to put them on TV somewhere. I want them talking about football. I want them around football. You know, just the fact that, you know, I'm reading his letter now that was posted there. You know, he took the time to handwrite this letter and put it out there. You know, this is just in the post. I'm not going to talk into my phone for talk to text. I'm going to sit down with pen and paper and I'm going to write this out. You know, this is my life. This was my dream. I worked probably for this day since I was in the second grade.
Yeah.
And, you know, I give this guy all the credit in the world, and hopefully he finds a place in football somewhere.
Oh, he definitely will.
On the sidelines, mm-hmm. maybe reporting it.
Yes.
He'll be 25 tomorrow, for that matter.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, Rob, I do recall when he was coming into the league, he had one of the higher field IQs, game IQs, in the draft that year. I believe that's one of the main reasons why he was drafted where he was, because of the value and a guy who understands the game like that. But again, it just proved that he was smart enough, because at the end of the day, he made the smart decision and took care of his body. And that's what we tell the high school kids, right? When I do all the talking with all the high school kids, the first thing that they talk about, and I think what your son played, right, Rob? Your son played
yep.
high school. And I'm sure the first thing that they said is, boys, take care of yourselves, because this game is not easy on your body. And I think that he made the right decision. I got the utmost respect for him, because, again, you got to take care of yourself. You got to be able to have a family. I mean, I think of guys like Ryan Shazier, who got completely lit up, and they have a problem. They can't, for a while, he didn't walk. I mean, he's still not the same, and it affected the way he ran the rest of his family and his livelihood. So take care of yourselves. That's the first thing we tell all these kids playing in high school.
Yeah, it doesn't say his master's degree. It doesn't say his discipline, but it does say he's working towards his master's degree. So, again, maybe he should take that job at Boston College that McGloin was going to take as one of the team analysts.
Right.
You know, this is someone I would want. This is someone I would want to put there, especially if he has that kind of football smarts.
Well, we got some controversy boiling at UNC right now.
Yes, we do.
With the head coach.
We're not going to talk about it.
The head coach's mistress. What do we call? Is his I'm only gonna get in trouble. She's his spokesperson, manager, right?
PR person, CC'd on emails, you name it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can I do my best impression? We're not talking about this. We're not answering this question. Okay. I'll take
it.
Pitt, though.
You know what's funny? We all know someone like that. Yeah. We all know someone like that.
We do know someone.
And you
like
just
that.
Shake your head and go, yep. Uh-huh. I know what it is, but, you know, listen, at that stage of my life, I'd be like, listen, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. All right, it's 5:43 here at WILK, time for 2020 traffic and weather together before I get these young guys in trouble. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. start to wind things down on this Thursday, May 1st, 2025. Again, sunset today is at 8 o'clock. Hitting 8 o'clock each day longer and longer. I think it last light is like 8:30-something. So more time to do more things later into the evening. Either way, I'm in bed by 9:30. So up at 5:30, though, but I'm still in bed by 9:30. But just found out today that Vice President J.D. Vance will be the speaker at my daughter's graduation in 3 weeks at the Naval Academy. He will be speaking at the Naval Academy. President Donald Trump will be speaking at West Point. I did not see who will be speaking at the Air Force Academy, the Merchant Marine Academy, or the Coast Guard Academy. So it'll be it's usually broken up, and it usually rotates. 1 year it's the president, 1 year it's the vice president, 1 year it's the secretary of defense, 1 year it's the secretary of the Navy. And it rotates the same for each academy, just with their own secretary. It would be the secretary of the Air Force, secretary of the Army. It would be the Homeland Security Secretary for Coast Guard. And they rotate as it goes through. Sometimes the president says they want to do more. Some they just do their rotation. But it appears that the president, he's speaking at Alabama's graduation tonight, the University of Alabama. And that graduation is, I believe, at 8 o'clock tonight. And the security checkpoint started earlier today. So that's one of the downsides of having the president there. I'm sure it'll be just as much for the vice president. Usually when it's the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of the Navy, security is not too bad. Now you do have to have tickets and to get into the academy graduation. But it's not too bad because we can get as many tickets as we want. So as long as we request them ahead of time, we can get what we need to get the people in. So I'll be down there in 3 weeks. Now, commissioning week at the Naval Academy is an entire week of events. It's a lot of pomp and circumstance, a lot of, award ceremonies and military balls, and the superintendent of the academy's garden luncheon that the families go to, the immediate families with their midshipmen go to. The Blue Angels do two shows during the week, and then they fly over at the start of graduation. It's interesting because you would think they would fly over at the end when they throw their hats in the air. The Blue Angels fly over right as the program starts, as the 4,000 there's 4,000 there in the stadium. As the 1,000 graduates march onto the field to take their seats, 30% of them being second lieutenants in the Marine Corps being commissioned, and the other are ensigns in the United States Navy being commissioned. As those 1,000 come in and finally take their seats, the Blue Angels come across and do their low flyover in the morning, and then usually head to their next air show. So it'll be interesting. Per CBS, president will be the University of Alabama at 7. A texter said it was 7:30. I saw 8 o'clock on news, but it could very well be 7:30. But he is definitely speaking in the University of Alabama tonight, and he will be speaking at the U.S. Military Academy's graduation at West Point. And I believe that's in 2 or 3 weeks as well. The other day was the last day of classes. This weekend into next week is finals. And then that's that. So we'll be going down that Saturday, and we'll be there all the way through Memorial Day. So that week of whatever the week before Memorial Day week, I will unfortunately not be here, but I will be watching my youngest walk across the stage, shake the hand of the Vice President of the United States, and be commissioned as a second lieutenant in the United States Marine Corps. So we're looking forward to that on that Friday, the 23rd, I think that is. So now that we've gotten through all that, New York City public schools have sparked outrage for sending a newsletter to teachers accusing Israel of genocide in Gaza. Now, I don't really know if a lot of you know the makeup of the New York City Board of Education, but it has a very high Jewish population as far as teachers go. The 14-page Teacher Career Pathways Spring 2025 newsletter. Now, this was an official newsletter from the Department of Education in New York City and the United Federation of Teachers Union. So it was a joint effort between the official department and their union. It went out over the last week to master teachers across the system's 1,800 schools. It stated the genocide in Gaza, among other global injustices, emphasized the urgent need for student voices to be centered and heard, it says. The claim was mentioned in a section of the newsletter headed Teacher Leadership in Action that discussed the student-led March 28 Day of Action from the Columbus Campus Youth Council in the Bronx, triggered by pro-Palestinian protests last fall. Now, at what point anywhere does an official organization like the Board of Education for New York City, one of the largest school districts in the world, and their union actively discriminate against a large portion of their membership, their teachers? Now, there was a point in time back when I was a kid and went to the public school system in New York, I would say Jewish American teachers were probably the majority in the school systems. Now, that has changed, but they're still a large portion of the system. Using school funds, union funds, to actively discriminate against some of your membership, some of your employees, how does that not open anything up to lawsuits that would, in the end, take away from student resources, of course, set up adversarial relationships within the school themselves, within teachers and their unions? The mere fact that the focus is never on, or I shouldn't say never, the focus is not on how do we do the best job for our students to get the best results. It's this: let's divide our own membership. Let's insult each other. How can we successfully complete our mission if we're arguing amongst ourselves or don't trust ourselves or calling a large portion of ourselves wanting genocide? I just don't get it. I don't understand how it's tolerated. I don't understand how these members are still members of their union. You don't have to be, even in New York. You don't have to be in Pennsylvania. Yes, you lose some benefits from your union, but you still have the same rights as anyone else. You still get the same contracts as anyone else. Now, obviously, if there's disciplinary trouble and stuff like that, but in all honesty, how much has your union helped you in any of those situations to begin with? And if you're doing the right thing, you know, what are you getting into? It's unbelievable that this is what's happening. And it goes into telling stories, obviously. It says one veteran Jewish teacher was forced to lock herself in an office while a rowdy mob of students hunted her down at Hillcrest High School in Queens. This is going on in our public schools. This is going on, not here, but in New York City. But we've seen it on the news in our campuses, and it's continually being allowed. Now there's lawsuits involved. Now there's more accountability, and they'll definitely be paying out because it's clear and cut. When you're sending out literature that targets a large portion of your membership, you're screaming for a civil suit. You're screaming for damages. And again, in the end, what does that do? Well, it takes away resources from our children. It takes away energy away from our children. It takes away the team environment that should be coordinating to teach our children. So it's sad to see these things, but it's not, unfortunately, surprising. It's 5:57 here at WILK. We'll be back to close out the show in just a minute. Well, that's it for the Rob O'Donnell Show today on WILK News Radio. Thank the team here. Jake in the control room. Paul Michaels back with the news. EJ doing you the traffic. And tune in to WILK tomorrow. You got the morning show with Nancy and Jason. You got Bob Cordero from 9 to noon. Sue Henry before that. And then you got me, Rob O'Donnell, weekdays from 3 to 6. And we'll have more to talk about tomorrow. Hopefully nothing crazy goes on between now and then. Until then, God bless, be safe, and we'll see you tomorrow.